morning is Lowe against Endicott. Mr. Hennick.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Robert Hennick, and I represent Anu Lowe on this appeal. The central issue in this appeal is whether Mr. Lowe's 2254 petition was timely filed when it was filed within 1 year of non-tollable time following the state Supreme Court decision in Head that provided a necessary predicate for the federal constitutional claim to be raised in that petition. As we are all aware, federal law provides for a 1 year statute of limitations for federal habeas cases and provides for various trigger points. The most common, of course, is the finality of the direct appeal. If that was a controlling one, we obviously would lose. However, an alternative trigger point is under 2244D1D, which is the date on which the factual predicate for the claim or claims presented could have been discovered with the exercise of due diligence. Our position in this case, as is clear from our briefs, is that the trigger in this was the state Supreme Court decision in Head, which
I have a great deal of difficulty understanding how this position can be reconciled with D1C. D1C says that a new decision of the Supreme Court extends the time only if A, it's based on the Constitution of the United States, and B, it is expressly declared to be retroactive. And your argument is that D swallows that by saying, and oh, by the way, any other decision extends the time, even if it's not constitutional and even if it's not declared to be retroactive.
I understand the Court's
concern.
That
rather makes C pointless, doesn't it?
Actually, no. What we are looking at, and the Court needs to keep in mind, is that what we are looking at, and I think this is discussed some in Johnson, is that this is a federal claim. In state court,
if
state
it's not
law
a
can
federal
be illegal.
Claim, it's not properly brought under 2254 at all.
Exactly. And when we're talking about a federal claim, the relevant law is U.S. Supreme Court law under 2254D.
Exactly. But look, counsel. What that leads to is the conclusion that a change in state law can never be the basis for any relief in federal court. It doesn't mean it can be the basis for relief in federal court for a longer period. It means you shouldn't be here at all because claims are based on state law can't be vindicated in federal court under 2255. Only federal claims can be vindicated under 2255.
Exactly.
But of course, that's what sends us to C. If you want to see how the time is extended when a claim based on when the federal law changes, C is what tells you.
Yes.
And D is what tells you what happens when the facts change.
Yep.
Not
and
when
as,
the law changes.
And as the U.S. Supreme Court held in Johnson, a state Supreme Court decision, a state court decision, can be a factual predicate. There is no metaphysical distinction between law and facts. A fact or a state court decision can be as much a fact as any other fact. A written piece of paper, the decision, is as much a fact as a contract. It is construed the same way as a contract. You look at the words, you see what the words mean. And the words of a contract can be facts.
So on your understanding, does the time extend every time this court hands down a decision?
No, of course not.
Why not?
Because this court's decisions do not provide the necessary predicate for the state.
We say what the Constitution means. We can say what federal statutes mean. We do it all the time.
The necessary predicates in this case. There is the legal predicate, which is the United States constitutional law. There are factual predicates.
And we decide what the U.S. Constitution means. We do it every day.
Exactly, and under 2254.
So I don't understand why, on your view, every decision of this court, we render approximately 900 a year, doesn't extend the time for everybody to seek collateral review.
Because the issue here is whether or not the constitutional issue, the underlying constitutional issue, is whether the jury instructions or whether Mr. Lowe was denied the right to a jury finding beyond a reasonable doubt on every fact necessary for conviction. To make out that claim, we have to establish three things. We have to establish the federal constitutional law that has been settled since the 1970s. We also have to establish that what exactly the instruction said. That's an issue of fact. We have to establish what evidence was presented at the trial. That's a fact. We also have to establish, under state law, what facts are necessary for conviction. And in this particular case, the only way to establish that is through the Head decision. And that decision wasn't released until July 11th of 2002. The reason why that makes a difference is because a decision by this court, for instance, a decision by this court, number one, wouldn't change the controlling legal principles, because under 2254 D1, the controlling legal principles are those as set by the United States Supreme Court. Number two, it wouldn't change the factual principles under 2254 or under a 2254 petition, because it's an issue of state law, not federal law, what the elements of the crime are. This court is controlled by the state Supreme Court's decisions on state law. So a decision by this court, I don't see, would have any effect in extending the time. Also, just going back briefly to my point, when we're talking about a federal constitutional claim, the relevant law is the federal constitutional law, and then we apply what happened to that law to see whether or not there's been a violation. Now, in this case, we have Johnson v. United States. In Johnson v. United States, the Supreme Court held that a state court decision can be a factual predicate, even though it involves a legal determination. It can be a factual predicate. And this court in Daniels v. Uchtman referred to that decision as basically being based on the question of whether the state court decision provided a necessary element of the federal claim. Also, when we look at Johnson, we look at the rationale of Johnson. The rationale of Johnson is that basically that Congress did not intend to cut off a federal claim before it could even be brought, before it had accrued. In this case, the federal claim had not accrued until the Head decision on July 11th of 2002. Before that date, the erroneous dicta in Camacho was controlling in state court, and we would not have had a claim at that point, or we would not be able to at least establish a claim. In Head, the state Supreme Court held that the decision in Camacho was wrong, that the revisions to the state homicide statutes that dealt with imperfect self-defense since 1988, that the language of those statutes, that the legislative history and purpose of those statutes as they were enacted in 1988, and as the public policy of those statutes as they were enacted in 1988, required only that the defendant have an actual belief that his actions were necessary to protect himself. There did not have to be any objective, reasonable belief on any of it. Camacho was wrong. The statute meant what Head says it meant since the beginning in 1988. Now, what we have, however, is, and the state relies a great deal on the Lowe's own decision, in which the state Supreme Court held that, in a sense, Head is not retroactive. If the state Supreme Court said what the state says here, then we lose. But it doesn't say that. The Head decision addressed at least two different things. One substantive issue of what these statutes require, what evidence or what facts must the state prove beyond a reasonable doubt in order to convict someone in Lowe's position of attempted first-degree intentional homicide. That's number one, the substantive issue, what these statutes mean. The second, the procedural issue of what needs to be in a jury instruction. In Lowe's case, what the state Supreme Court said is that that second, that procedural requirement of a jury instruction requiring each of these facts that the state must prove beyond a reasonable doubt, that is not retroactive. Lowe, the Supreme Court in Lowe, does not say that the statutes meant something on July 10th of 2002 and meant something different on July 11th of 2002. What they said is that we are not going to apply retroactively the jury instruction requirement. And that is why we have a federal claim. Because although a state court can decide retroactivity questions, they can't decide that a jury instruction is permissible if it doesn't require proof of every element of the offense. The Supreme Court recognized that in Mulaney. Supreme Court recognized that in California v. Roy, Corella v. California. That is settled law. And whatever the state Supreme Court may decide about its own laws, it cannot decide an issue of federal constitutional law contrary to what the United States Supreme Court has held. That's number one. Number two, the issue of even if we get to the issue of equitable tolling, I would cite to this court's decision in Owens v. Boyd, where the court said that we can't just take the statute here that provides essentially a kind of tolling that the Congress has decided are appropriate and just say we don't agree with it. But when there is a separate impediment, an impediment that is not covered or not the variety covered by 2244D1, then equitable tolling may apply. If the state is correct in this case that the Head decision is not a factual predicate, then I would submit that it is a kind of impediment that is not covered by the other things that are in 2244D1. We could not have brought the claim beforehand, and under the standards for setting equitable tolling, I think that that means that this court does have the discretion to find that equitable tolling applies in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hennick. Ms. Wellman.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Assistant Attorney General Sally Wellman representing the Warden Endicott today. The first point I want to make is that we do not read Johnson nearly as broadly as Mr. Lowe does. Johnson did not broadly say that a state court decision is a fact, or in our terms of our statute, a factual predicate for purposes of starting a new time limit. Johnson much more narrowly held that a state court order vacating a prior state conviction that had been used to enhance a federal sentence triggered the new time limit, that it was a fact or factual predicate that triggered the new time limit. Now, the distinction isn't one here of drawing fine lines between a decision, a judgment, and an order. It's the nature of what the order did. In Johnson, an order vacating the prior predicate conviction that was used to enhance the sentence meant that Mr. Johnson himself no longer had a prior conviction that counted for federal enhancement. That in and of itself, when brought to the federal court, gave him the right to have his enhancement removed or his sentence modified as if he had not had a prior conviction in the first place. That is very different from what Mr. Lowe seeks to do, which is to say, I want to take a state court decision discussing, analyzing, applying the law, in a big sense, statutory law, procedural law, in another person's case, Deborah Head's case, and say that because Deborah Head got relief under this new decision that rendered a different new interpretation of the statute, said our prior decision interpreting the statute was wrong and we're changing it now, that should apply, that should be a fact for his case. That's not a fact, that's law. It changed Deborah Head's legal status. Deborah Head's conviction was reversed. She's no longer convicted of first-degree murder unless the state retried her. It didn't change Mr. Lowe's legal status. He's still convicted of attempted first-degree intentional homicide. It's not a fact in his own legal litigation history. And that's the distinction that's important between Johnson and Mr. Lowe's case. And that's what the court recognized in Shannon. Now, granted, obviously, Shannon versus Newland, I think. Yes, Newland isn't controlling here, but I think it's very well reasoned, and it's very similar to the same type of state court decision. In California, prior decisions had said that intent is an element of voluntary manslaughter. California Supreme Court issued a new decision in Lasco, said they're wrong. We're wrong. It's not an element, but held that's not retroactive. And Mr. Shannon wanted to say, well, that new decision is a fact for me. I can now use this new decision to trigger a new one-year time limit. And Shannon said, no, it's not a fact. It's not an order, a judgment, a decision pertaining to you. It's a legal decision. It's an analysis. You want to try and use it to your favor, but that's not the kind of narrow fact where a legal decision or order can also be a fact. We're not denying that in some situations it can. In Johnson, we don't disagree with that. I have a hard time thinking of another example of where that, when that might occur.
I did disagree with it. It's a decision of the Supreme Court.
Well, that wouldn't be too bad. But, you know, we're not trying to say that Johnson doesn't say what it does say, but it doesn't say something much broader, which is that a decision is a fact. It doesn't say that. Also, Mr. Lowe seems to want to emphasize greatly that the new decision that he wants to use, head, must be a necessary predicate of his due process claim. But necessary predicate isn't enough. It has to be a factual predicate. And he's reading factual right out of the statute. Because under his view, any new state court decision, and possibly any new federal court decision, lower federal court decision, that's helpful to him, can be a new fact and start a new time limit. And that flies so much in the face of what the Act is about in terms of both finality and respect for state court decisions. And we agree, and we argue in our brief, that if he's correct that a new state court decision that the state court held is not retroactive on collateral review is a fact in another person's case on a proposition of law is a factual predicate, then that totally guts all of the other limits in the statute, including...
Then civilization as we know it topples.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but it certainly eviscerates the time limit concerns in the Act, I think, greatly.
I think you've made your point.
Thank you. We also will rely on our brief in terms of the equitable tolling argument, unless the court has any further questions. And we do not believe he presents a federal constitutional claim because the state court has no federal requirement to make head retroactive. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Right. Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Hennack?
Yes. The state's reliance on Shannon and the principle that in Johnson they were addressing the defendant's own status and part of his own litigation history basically ignores the fact that in Johnson the Supreme Court did not rely on any of that as a basis for its rationale. What it relied on was the fact that the state court decision provided a necessary predicate for the federal claim. It didn't matter to the Supreme Court, from at least from my reading of it, that this was in his own case. It doesn't matter to the Supreme Court, the majority at least, that it was within his own litigation history. The reference that Shannon makes for that principle is to the dissent. And the last I heard, the dissent is what the law is not. So what we have to look at is Johnson's rationale, not a distinction that really doesn't make a difference. The fact here that we are relying on, the factual predicate, is identification of what facts are necessary under state law, that the state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt for conviction. That is a factual issue that can be proven. It is a factual issue that can be identified like any other fact. we get tied up in this whole metaphysical idea of whether it's law or fact, but the Supreme Court rejected that distinction in Johnson. The government did not even argue in support of that distinction in Johnson, yet we are back here arguing it again in this case. It doesn't make a difference. What makes a difference is that Anu Low could not raise the issue, the federal claim, until the head decision identified the facts that had to be proven. And that's what we're relying on. And for that reason, I request that the decision below be reversed.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hennick. The case is taken under advisement.